What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 115 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the king of the courtside, Joey. Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year, John. It is going to be a wonderful 2019, I have a feeling.
Absolutely. We push this over to the New Year day, exactly January 1st. If you're joining us here live on Twitch, welcome. If you're listening to the podcast later on your podcast host of choice, welcome as well. Make sure you guys follow us on Twitter. Find Joey at Courtside King. Find me, John, at Fiasco. If you're, again, watching live on Twitch, that's the handles below, or mugshots. If you're on the podcast, it'll be in the show notes below. Joey, I love this episode. Every time a new year comes around, we get to recap everything that happened in esports and a lot of other things that we're looking forward to in 2019. What are some of the things we're going to be touching on this episode of the Level Up Podcast?
So overall, guys, this is going to be a very relaxed episode. We are talking best games of 2018. Again, we're not going to go through every single game because that would take us forever, and nobody's got time for that. But we're going to hit some of the big ones that stood out to John and I, as well as some of our fans. We're going to talk about esports in 2018 as well. A lot of big events, a lot of big numbers, a lot of money in esports. So we're going to talk a bit about that. And then from there, we're going to 2019 to talk about the games and esports events that we are looking forward to.
All right, so Joey, I know we partied. Well, we didn't party together, but we partied last night, ringing in the new year. We popped the bubbly. We had a lot of alcohol. So dare I ask if there's a drink of choice for you this morning on the 1st of January 2019 for your drink of choice?
John, there is no alcohol for me. I'm actually running on about 4 hours of sleep.
Oh, my. you should have slept more.
Yeah, I went to bed around 1 a.m., and then my wife had a flight at like 5:30 this morning she had to wake up for. So I've been up since then. Once the light comes up, I cannot fall back asleep. It's a curse, I know. Unfortunately, it's carried over into 2019. But I am here with a glass of water, feeling all right.
All right. I am letting my liver relax a little bit as well. I have a nice glass of Coke Zero in my awesome Washington Nationals souvenir cup. Yes, I do like traditional sports. Still, if you've watched the show, you know that, but it's fine. The Nationals. Hopefully they don't disappoint me in 2019 like they did in 2018. Joey, it's not a sports podcast, though. It's a gaming and esports podcast, so let's waste no more time. You have your water. I have my soda. Our livers are having a rest this morning. Let's get right into gaming and esports news. Actually, no, we're just going to go right into gaming and esports in 2018. How about that?
That works for me. Okay, John, so a ton of big games came out in 2018. Fans, I'm sure you guys have played a ton of them. One of the biggest ones of 2018, and I believe the game of the year on most game award shows, is God of War. John, you being a PlayStation owner, did you get a chance to play God of War this year?
I actually did not, and I'm really disappointed in it, but I've played the prior Game of Wars, and they've never let me down. It's the graphics are amazing, the story, and how they're able to tell the story. I'm blanking on his name. Kronos? Oh, man, I can't believe I'm blanking.
Kratos,
there we go. The way they're able to tell his story all the way from God of War 1 all the way up to the present day God of War is really, really cool. And they bringing in that mythological aspect to it is something I feel like a lot of people underestimate. A lot of people are attracted to games that tie in that mythological sidetrack to it. And God of War has always done a great job with this. The current God of War that is out, I've watched hours and hours and hours of gameplay on Twitch. I have read all the reviews. I've seen everything. This game by far deserves Game of the Year of 2018. This title has never let me down. Granted, I've never played it. I have nothing but respect for this game and fully believe that when I do buy it and play it, I will not be disappointed. Like the millions of other people who have played this, they're not disappointed either.
Yeah, God of War is always one of those series that you completely link to PlayStation. When you look at PlayStation, they've had so many great series over the years. God of War easily being a top three, one of them. This game came out with some of the best graphics we've seen in gaming yet. I mean, John, did you see any of the cinematic stuff, like for the release trailers where they walk through the snow?
Yes.
And just the footprints that are left? Like, I wish I had a PlayStation to play games like this and Horizon Zero Dawn. Again, Xbox fanboy here, PC gamer now. But there are games on PlayStation that just draw you in, and God of War is definitely one of them.
Yeah, and the graphics, I feel like this series, the graphics have been just amazing from the get-go. They've really challenged what the industry has already put out there, and each game that comes out, they push that envelope even more, Joey. And you mentioned just the level of detail in the snow, like when he's walking the snow, just the graphics and everything. There's gonna come a day where you're not going to be able to tell the difference between a video game and real life, and I feel like we're getting there even faster now. And God of War is a prime example of the power that these developers can use in these consoles, in the PC industry, to really take these games to the next level. And I can't say enough about God of War. Well deserved here. I know a lot of people didn't think God of War would be the number one game, but really, at the end of the day, I think it's hard to argue against God of War being the number one game of 2018.
Yeah, not only the graphics, but the story also play a big part into that. When you look at some of the other games that were nominated, like a Red Dead Redemption, for example, there is story in it, but God of War is very story-driven, and I think that's one of the things that kind of pushes it ahead of some of these other titles in that list. Sticking with another Sony title, Marvel's Spider-Man. This is another game with great graphics, great energy, and a ton of things to do in it. This has been rocking charts all over the place. Another top five game in many charts for this year. Sony killing it again for 2018. This one with Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. And here's the thing that I love about this, right? If you turn back the time, the time clock, and you go all the way back to like when Spider-Man 2 came out, you know, the Tobey Maguire version of Spider-Man, those games came out, and there was some power behind it. It was a decent game. But the current generation Spider-Man in this game had so much hype around it, more than I've really seen from a video game based upon a movie. A lot of times those crossovers, video games based upon movies where they try to adapt scenes and fights and whatnot from the Hollywood big screen to the video game, really falls flat on its face. Spider-Man did not disappoint, both in theaters and off. But the game itself is absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, I mean, again, it's another PS4 exclusive, and it just really, really takes off. And I feel like this title should be the golden standard for any game developer that wants to adapt a movie into a video game. That's how great of a job they did with Spider-Man.
Well, I think it's a little different, though, if you go from a movie to a game. In the sense, this is a superhero-based game. I think it could be a standard for a superhero-based game, but you can't really bring an FPS into this environment and adapt it in the same way, if you know what I mean. I did not play Spider-Man. Again, not a PlayStation owner. But from what I've seen, John, it seems like it's a very open world. It seems like you can do things that are quest-based, but there's also plenty of things you can just do on your own and choose when you do things because of the open world aspects. Okay, let's go to another open world game, Monster Hunter World. This one came out on Xbox and PlayStation. I think it was just Xbox and PlayStation in January, and then it came out on PC in September or August, if I remember correctly, of 2018. This is another huge game, John. You and I both playing Atlas now. We have friends who play Ark. It kind of has certain aspects of that to it, but it also has that traditional Japanese style where you continue to build your character up based on the characters you take down. The biggest thing that stood out to me in Monster World, not only the huge map that it comes with and the different zones and the numbers of creatures and the constant DLC they keep adding in, but I love the fact that you can change the environment by taking down creatures. So if you kill something that's a lower level or lower, what's it, ecosystem type of thing? So big predator feeds on this little predator. If you take out those little predators, who's the big predator going to feast on? It changes the whole ecosystem of different zones, which is incredible to me.
Yeah, and really, this is Monster Hunter's real push into the North American market. Monster Hunter, a title that's been around in Japan and a lot of the Asian markets for years. A lot of North American fans who heard of this title would have to buy the Japanese version of this game to play it here in North America. It just really wasn't marketed in the North American market for some reason. And now Monster Hunter World comes out in North America and really takes off. A lot of hype around it. You see a lot of gamers that low-key liked Monster Hunter, and they were just kind of playing it low-key just because it wasn't that popular. No one was really talking about it. You didn't hear podcasts talk about Monster Hunter. You didn't hear a lot of the big streamers talk about Monster Hunter. Then Monster Hunter World came out and really built upon that survival aspect of video games like Ark and now Atlas from the creators of Ark. Now, building on Monster Hunter World, bringing that open world idea to Monster Hunter, it's really taken off. And you know, you can't, I mean, if even if you've never heard of Monster Hunter, you've now heard of Monster Hunter, and you've probably taken a look at this game, whether you were watching streams of people playing it, or you did some research on it, or you even bought it and played it. This is a great introduction to the mainstream for the North American market for Monster Hunter, and this is just going to be the beginning for them. I really feel like the studio here is going to take Monster Hunter and build upon that hype in North America from the launch of Monster Hunter World.
Not only that, but I believe this is the first Monster Hunter on Xbox as well. I think it's only been PlayStation exclusive up to this point. So also branching out on new consoles, I wouldn't be surprised if we see it on Switch later on as well. It's going to be a little graphically intensive for the Switch, but we've seen a lot of big graphic games go over there. So it's a potential to move there too. With that being said, John, a few disclaimers on this one. It takes a lot of time to play this game. It is huge, and they're constantly adding DLC, so there's tons and tons of monsters to take down as you go. I started it. I'm in like the third or fourth zone. Trying to find time to play this game and capture all these monsters takes forever. So keep that in mind. The other thing, it does not walk you through the tutorial. It is very much throw you into the game with very complex controls. So it's a lot of learning on the go. Overall, great game, but definitely one to know you're going to have to put some time into if you want to play it. Let's see what else we got. Let's talk Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. This one's just recent, John. One of the biggest fighters out there, but very different from your other fighters. It's not like that one-on-one Tekken feel, that Street Fighter feel, that even Guilty Gear feel. This is very different. It's like a mass brawl for the most part. Some tournaments do one-on-ones, but we see a lot of events pick up with multiple people playing on the same stage with these iconic Nintendo characters and iconic characters of really multiple series now. They're bringing in so many different people. I have played Ultimate. I freaking love Ultimate. I don't have a Switch myself, but this is definitely a game that I'd consider buying one for.
So you're saying you're not a Jigglypuff main?
Not yet, John.
No,
not yet.
Not yet. No, I mean, look, whenever Smash comes out with a new title, for however many years in between it takes them to release a new title, whatever, the Smash community is one of the most passionate communities out there, and they really support these games when they come out. You can't say enough about it. Just the hype, the community, the play style, you're never going to hear anything bad about it. They've really changed it. They've added a lot of characters to it. There's more variety now. And that's a good thing. It's going to challenge people to learn new characters, new combos, new play styles. And it's really great. Like, when you sit down and talk with someone who's passionate about Smash, they will be able to talk to you about the combos, ledge techniques, and everything down to the pixel. And it's really impressive. And these are just casual, hardcore gamers, not even on the pro scene. That's just how dedicated this fan group is. So when Smash Ultimate came out, it's not a surprise that we saw a ton of pre-orders. It's not a surprise that we saw launch tournaments the night of Smash Ultimate coming out. It's not a surprise that this was one of the hottest selling games in the shortest period amount of time after its release. It's really not that big of a surprise. And you throw it on a hot console like the Switch. Are you kidding me? That's just going to take off to a whole new level. And we're seeing that. And yeah, it just got released, you know, fairly recently. But we're going to see this momentum continue. Just take a look. If you're in a community that has gaming tournaments around, whether you're here in the Washington, D.C. area, whether you're in Miami, you're in L.A. or whatever, take a look at your local gaming scene. There's going to be a ton of Smash Ultimate tournaments popping up if they're not there already. And I guarantee you, if you want to try to go up against some of the best amateur competitors anywhere in the world, you can do it right there in your own backyard. And what a great way to meet other people as well through Smash Ultimate. That community is so passionate, so strong, and so together. It's really great, and the game is going to thrive because of it.
So, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, 70-plus fighters, 100-plus stages, and more than 800 tracks of licensed music. John, this is a Mambo-sized game. There is a ton going on. We already know the first DLC. It's going to be the Piranha Plant coming out at the end of January. And then it's going to be followed by Persona 5's Joker. So my question to you, John, if you could add a new character into Super Smash Bros. Ultimate from the Nintendo universe, who would it be?
Oh, geez, I don't even know all the characters in Smash Ultimate right now.
I know, right? It's hard to keep up.
Well, to be completely honest, and I said it before, I'm a huge Metal Gear Solid fanboy, and Solid Snake is in the game already. That would be the one that I would really push. I just love the Metal Gear Solid universe, the story it's created. It's kind of fun. If you're watching on Twitch, we have some activity in the chat room. Waluigi is a suggestion, which I would love to see Waluigi on there as well. That'd be
absolutely
cool.
He's already in Mario Tennis. Why not bring him to this?
Is Wario in there as well?
I think Wario's already in
Wario's
here.
But bring in all the baddies. I'm completely fine with that too. I think that'd be great. I think we need to have one for Peach. We need to have a bad princess in the Nintendo universe as well. I think that'd be kind of funny. But personally with me, it was Solid Snake, and they did bring him in Ultimate. So my wish was fulfilled at least there. I really can't think of another. I mean, Yoshi's already in the game. I'm a big Yoshi fanboy as well. Let's see. I don't know. Is Toad in the game?
See, it's hard to tell. Like, Toad isn't playable, but yeah. He might be an assist trophy or one of those little item type of things.
Yeah.
I haven't kept track of all those hundreds of them. So I'm thinking Tails from Sonic would be a good one. I think he would be fun because they only have Sonic the Hedgehog in there right now. I think Tails would be a good accompaniment. Or Shadow, maybe as like a reverse Sonic, would be kind of cool.
Or even better, Knuckles. Knuckles was awesome.
Ooh, Knuckles would be good.
You know, I remember when I remember my friend got an old school Sega Genesis and got Sonic and Knuckles on it, and that thing was incredible. Just to imagine how the Sega Genesis was back. The Genesis was like in the 90s, right? Like mid 90s is when that was popular, and that was a really good game. There was a huge storyline for a traditional left to right movement based level game like Sonic and Knuckles, and it was just so well put together. The entire Sonic generation, the Sonic universe, was incredibly well done. So I would love to see more Sonic characters. You know, you have Sonic in there. I agree with Tails, and I think Knuckles would be another great idea as well.
1989 is the year of that Sega Genesis for you.
89. Wow, that's old.
89. I know. I didn't realize it was that old either. I was thinking it was mid-90s as well. So looks like we're wrong on that one. What else do we got here? So Super Smash Brothers is a great one. Let's talk Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Have you played any of the new rebooted Tomb Raiders, John?
To be completely honest, I'm not a big Tomb Raider fan. And I get a lot of flack about that from people in the OTN Discord. I get a lot of flack for that in real life as well. It's interesting. To me, it feels like it's just an idea and a theme that's been overdone. Whether it's video games or in Hollywood, it just feels like it's oversaturated. That's why it's never really pulled me. But I've heard great reviews about the game. The gameplay looks amazing. So I'm not going to knock it for anything like that. Just to me, it doesn't personally appeal to me. But the game itself looks great, plays well, and the reviews I've heard, people are really happy with it.
Yeah, so I love the new Tomb Raider. I hated all the old Tomb Raiders. I have not played Shadow yet, but I have played the original two, Rise of the Tomb Raider and Tomb Raider Definitive? It might just be named Tomb Raider. So I've played the first two of the series. They were really good. I love the collection aspect that adds lore to the game, John. So when you're exploring these different areas that you get stranded on originally at the beginning of each of these games, you're going to these different areas and you're discovering things like maybe an ancient coin. And then it goes back to like history and builds upon the lore that way. So you get it by the game itself, but you also get it by finding these collectibles. And I think that's a really unique part to the game. It looks gorgeous. When I was playing the first one, I recently played it like a couple months ago. It looks so good for the time. Like the graphics are just so up there. The water graphics are incredible. The grass graphics, incredible. So if you're looking for something very graphically well done, Tomb Raider is excellent. If you really want to scratch that adventure edge, that exploratory edge, but also get a little bit of a thriller as you're running away or trying to sneak up on someone, Tomb Raider scratches those itches. Shadow of the Tomb Raider, incredible reviews so far. Okay, so Super Smash Brothers characters, we have Goku being mentioned in the chat over here on Twitch. So let's talk Dragon Ball Z Fighter as well as the other one. What's the name of the other big one coming out? The Show and Jump one. Jump Force, I believe. So two huge fighters coming out this next year. Dragon Ball Z Fighter. Dragon Ball Z, John, we both have watched it at least at some point in our lives. Incredible series. It has a huge following. And those fighters always do incredibly well. And then with Jump Force, we have a bunch of different titles being moved into one another. I mean, we have My Hero Academia's main lead going into it. We have characters from Dragon Ball Z. We have characters from Naruto. This is going to be a huge anime-based fighter.
Yeah, and it's going to be absolutely great. And as a big My Hero Academia fan myself, bringing Deku into Jump Force, I think is going to be absolutely fantastic. And that alone is going to bring people into that game. But Dragon Ball Z, let's talk about something that has withstood the test of time. I mean, this is not a new anime. This is not a new generation of anime or manga out there. This thing has been around forever, and it continues to encapture gamers, old and young alike. And it's phenomenal at what they're doing. And Dragon Ball Z is just any game that comes out is going to be supported by the Dragon Ball Z community, and that's what we really saw. And it felt like a lot more was put into the game. It felt like the developer really knew what they were doing this time with this game going forward, and they realized the community needed something a little bit more. So they really took their time with this game, and just the community loved it. And it's great because the fighting scene can feel stale from time to time. Not a lot of new games will come out as frequent as some of the others. Even when you take a look at sport titles, that comes out every year. When you take a look at things like God of War, you know, that will come out, you know, every 2 to 3 years as well. Fighting games, there tends to be a long gap between fighting games when it comes out. So it's interesting. Jump Force, I think, has the potential to expand that fighting scene. And I feel like going outside of the Dragon Ball Z universe is really going to help them. That's where their bread and butter is going to be. So I'm kind of, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to in 2019 is seeing how Jump Force will continue to go forward and if they can really push that envelope when it comes to anime style fighting games.
Okay, a few more on my list, John. Assassin's Creed Odyssey. This is one of the most demanding titles we've seen from Assassin's Creed yet. I feel like the original game was very simple. It's very simple. You get your target, you assassinate them, you sneak away in a crowd. There was not too much to it. You had some countering for your fighting mechanics. But over the years, we've seen Assassin's Creed really evolve. And with some of these newer games, we've seen new adventure modes, new exploratory modes. And this latest one is very, very good. Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Again, I have not had the pleasure of playing it. I usually just don't have enough time for single-player games nowadays. But when you look at all the people we've talked to who have played this, who have put time into this game and all the different systems within the game, this sounds like the best Assassin's Creed yet, and it just continues to build upon the series very well.
Yeah, and this is good for Assassin's Creed. This is good for Ubisoft. This is good for the Assassin's Creed community because for a while, the Assassin's Creed games kind of became a little too vanilla. A lot of people after Assassin's Creed 3, which I believe that was the one that took place in the American Revolution, a lot of people started to get bored with the style. It just felt like the same game just retooled to a different era in history where you're trying to defeat the bad guys and try to preserve the good and so on and so forth. And a lot of people struggled with that. And now here comes Odyssey and just completely changes, not 100% completely changes, but changes how the gamer sees Assassin's Creed going forward. There's a huge nautical theme to this one, which is a theme we saw a lot in 2018. A lot of games took to the sea, or brand new games opened up the sea universe to gamers. And it really was a huge hit for Assassin's Creed, a demanding game that forced the gamer to think outside of their comfort zone, outside of their box, to try different things now that they have an ocean that they have to deal with as well. Assassin's Creed dabbled with the idea of pirates and ships and using oceans and some of the previous titles in the Assassin's Creed universe, but they never really focused on it too hardcore. Odyssey takes the best of both worlds, puts it together, and challenges the player to think outside of the box and go with it. From everything from like finding hidden shipwrecks, mythical beasts, combat arenas, you know, they've done such a great job with Assassin's Creed, and this has really rejuvenated a lot of the energy in the Assassin's Creed community that love this game and that are passionate about this game. And you can see it online, just the conversation around this game really sparked up once the game came out and a lot of players had a chance to play this game. There's a lot of positivity and hype around this game, and the community is now fired up with Assassin's Creed again.
A really good quote from the Polygon article here. But Odyssey's world feels like a turning point, loosening its focus on muted historical settings seen from grimy rooftops and instead embracing vibrant colors, mythological beasts, and sprawling swaths of ocean and countryside. So I think the biggest thing with this one, John, for me, is that it goes more into the fantasy aspect. So you're moving, you still keep the history aspect to it. We're in the Peloponnesian War in this one, and I believe you can actually choose if you go for the Athenian side or the Spartan side. Not 100% sure on that, but I believe people have said that. And then from there, you can do some stuff like you had in Brotherhood where you can build up crews. Same with Black Flag. You can get the whole ship aspect in there. So in a sense, they're building upon what they already had. They're taking these mechanics, they're adopting them, they're making them new, and they're adding on. So what we saw in the first three or four games, well, I think it was three because I think Black Flag was four, it was a bit more of a reskinned area in a new environment. Because you had the original one in like Israeli area, then you had one in Italy, then you had one in America. But more or less, it was a reskin with a few different mechanics. this is building upon big mechanics, the whole shipbuilding thing, the whole brotherhood thing where you recruit people. And now you're adding in these mythological beasts and making it completely new and more fantasy-esque. I feel like this is an interesting direction for Assassin's Creed, but I think it's a good one because you build upon the historical aspect, but you also bring in that fantasy aspect. You might attract more people doing this as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the unique things with this title in particular is that ability to bring in that mythological aspect to it. The game for, you know, a lot of people that enjoy reliving history in a slightly altered way, Assassin's Creed is going to be great for those people, but now they're going to bring in a whole new kind of gamer to the Assassin's Creed universe here with that mythological aspect to it. And I feel like you're not going to alienate the people that like the history part of Assassin's Creed, that want to, you know, see an alternative way of viewing history with this more mythological fantasy-esque part of Assassin's Creed. I think that's really going to enrich the storyline and really open a lot of doors to see how long this title can continue to create newer games. So I'm kind of interested to see what this is going to do for future titles with this fantasy-esque aspect being brought in to Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I don't know the number, but I feel like they're on like number 10 or something at this point. Because you have the base games, but then you have like three or four that are mobile-based. So with those and like the arcade editions, I feel like they're right around 10 games now. So they are pushing this IP to the limit. And I think taking this new turn is something, like you said, John, it has a new, fresh look to it. It might be able to reinvigorate it and bring in some new people as well. Sticking with the Sea of Thieves came out in March. This is a big title for Xbox. It hit the market. It hit records all around the world. One of the big complaints about it, though, it did not feel like a complete game to many people when it came out, you and I, myself included. I did buy it at the start, and since then, they've added a ton of DLC. I think there's still a lot that needs to be added. They're looking at redoing the quest system to make it more interesting and add more lore in. I think that's going to be a huge change for both of us as lore junkies. On top of that, they're adding an arena mode, which hopefully will break away some people from the Fortnite PUBG realm and kind of give a new spin on Battle Royale with a little bit more sea creature fun and seafaring. So a lot of exciting things for Sea of Thieves. The biggest thing for me is the fact that they have really enlisted this whole DLC thing. We're not looking at paid DLC all the time, but every about 2 months, I would say, we're getting free DLC. And this free DLC is coming with a good chunk of stuff, whether it be lore and a big animal, or whether it be a new ship, plus some new types of quests, whether it be volcanic isles. They've continued to add to the game in different elements, and they're building up the whole game as a whole instead of oversaturating certain areas of it.
So just real quick, I want to jump back to Assassin's Creed. Joey, you said it was right around 10. I just counted 21 titles.
21?
21 titles dating all the way back to 2007 on everything from PC, Nintendo DS, PlayStation Portable, Android, iOS, Windows phones, PlayStation Vista, you name it, PlayStation Vita, all of it. 21 titles in 11 years. Talk about a developer that is pumping out some serious games.
21. I can't even believe that. Wow.
21. Let's see here. We have Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed Altair's Chronicles, Assassin's Creed Bloodline, Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed 2 Discovery, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Revelations 3, Liberation, Black Flag, Pirates, Freedom's Cry, Rogue, Identity, Unity, Chronicles China, Syndicate, Chronicles India, Chronicles Russia, Origins, and Odyssey. That is a lot of games for one IP.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've not even heard of half of these games.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of them are mobile games that were only available on either iOS, Android, or Windows phones back in the day. There's a lot of mobile games here. So that is that. If we're talking like console and PC exclusive, that's one. That's Creed, Creed 2, Brotherhood, Revelations, Creed 3, Black Flag, Rogue, Unity, Syndicate, Origins, and Odyssey. That would be 11 main IP titles, or pardon me, titles from this IP on console or PC.
Okay, so we'll say I was close. I was
we'll
one off
in
close, that sense.
But still, 21 including mobile is pretty significant. Let's get back to Sea of Thieves, though, because I was a doubter. I did not want to buy Sea of Thieves back when it was announced. I waited the longest amount of time to buy Sea of Thieves, Joey, and you were right there trying to convince me to go headfirst into this $60 game to sail around on a boat with you doing my amazing pirate accents and everything. And I didn't want to do it. I was not a believer in this game. I thought there wasn't enough content. The open world aspect to it, I just thought it was just kind of meh. I was not a huge fan of the graphics. It really reminded me of Nintendo 64 back in the day. It just really didn't do it for me. And then some of the DLC came out. And you were telling me, John, the DLC is great. It's great. It's amazing. It's so much fun. You have to try it out. I'm like, Joey, I want to, but I'm not going to spend $60 on a game that I am 80% sure I'm not going to like. And then one day, Microsoft decided to say, hey, we're going to put this on sale for like $47.89. It was some odd price. I said, you know what? $60 is too much, but $47.89, that's the price point I'm looking for. So I decided to pull the trigger, Joey, and I was wrong. I was wrong. Sea of Thieves proved me wrong. The game is absolutely fun to play. The aspect of questing and just doing everything on your own, because, again, it's an open world concept that doesn't really give you direction on what to do. You have to figure it out for yourself. You have to find the treasure maps. You have to find the treasure. You have to find the quest. You have to discover the quest lines. You need to find the islands. And every island is going to present a different challenge based upon the time of day you get there. And, oh, yeah, by the way, while you're sailing there, the Kraken, the ghost ships, everything else that are there. Look, chat's giving me a hard time about that price point. That's great. it's absolutely outstanding how this game has evolved in the short amount of time it has been out. And I love the free DLC concept. Yes, if they wanted to charge for DLC, I think they could, and I think people would be fine with it. But the free DLC aspect for it is really what does it for me, because that is allowing the game to expand and become something even bigger and greater at no additional cost to the gamer themselves. It's something that I wish other titles and IP and developers would, I don't know, if they're going to say that, they're going to stick to it. Destiny. Pardon me. I had a chunk of my little thing in my throat.
A little bungee
in my throat. You know, that's one thing that I really applaud Sea of Thieves and Microsoft for, is that they really stuck to their free DLC concept. They really stuck to it when they have every right to charge people for additional content to this base game. But because they haven't, that's what's really made this game grow. It's what pulled me in. It's what pulled other naysayers into this game. And everyone is playing it, and a lot of people are enjoying it now. And Joey, I can't wait to hit the open seas again on Sea of Thieves. I just really wish the Xbox app on the PC was not a potato, because that is absolute garbage. Microsoft, fix it, please. But other than that, the game itself is fantastic, and I can't wait to see what 2019 has for this game.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things with the free DLC is the fact that they kept the $60 price at the front. That allowed them to do the free DLC, in my opinion. If it was a $20 game, I think they could charge for DLC. But with it being $60 and you had so many naysayers out there, I feel like the free DLC route was a good way to go, not including all the people they still have buying into this game. It's more and more numbers. Part of those, a good portion of those, are attributed to the Xbox Game Pass with so much steam that it's picking up. But overall, there's so much to do in the game, and it's just getting more and more as the year goes on. In January, we have the Arena coming out, which is that new Battle Royale-style game mode for Sea of Thieves. So if you don't want to just adventure, now you can have more PvP aspect in this new game mode. And then after that, they're redoing all the quest lines to make them more interesting. Right now, we have 4 different quests. Well, 5 if you include the Bilge Rats. And then Legends have a few more options. But for regulars, they want to build more lore into that, build more excitement, make it more interesting. And I think they're going to do that with this, I believe it's the 7th update, maybe, or 6th update that's coming out. They've been putting so many out, I can't even keep track. But exciting stuff ahead, John, and they redone the Kraken too, so that fight is more exciting. And we have not encountered a Kraken since then, so I'm a little excited for that. Okay, a couple more. We cannot leave this segment without talking about Red Dead Redemption 2, arguably the game of the year on many game award shows and many sites, right up there with God of War. Neither one of us has played Red Dead. We're both kind of waiting out, hoping it comes to PC. We will see if that happens or if it doesn't, and we just eventually give in on our respective consoles. But another fun Western shooter. We haven't really had a great one since Red Dead, the original. Now it's back with 2, with great graphics, excellent storylines, and tons of open world play. Heck, we have one friend who even bought it, and he likes the cowboy stuff, but he plays it for the poker aspect. So Red Dead Redemption 2, killing it in all different areas.
You know, and while we are, yes, we are waiting for it to come to PC, holding out hope that 2019 is going to be the year that Red Dead comes to PC, the fact that people are buying this game for the poker aspect is driving me up a wall. You are paying a full price for this title, and you're only playing literally 1% of the game. That's fine. You know what? You do you. That's completely fine. If that's what you want to do, awesome. Go for it. But this game itself, the story mode, the hours I've watched of it on Twitch, the graphics, the way it's played, it's incredible. And I feel like, yes, it deserves every opportunity to be discussed as the game of the year for 2018. It just sucks it had to go up against God of War in a lot of cases. And that's going to be a hard title to beat. That is a strong title that has proven time and time again that it's not going to be defeated. And Red Dead, while yes, it's a great title, Red Dead Redemption 2, and it's a strong game, and there's a lot of hype around it, it just couldn't overthrow God of War in a lot of cases, but it's a very strong second, and I would argue a very close second to God of War. I can't wait to play it on PC, Joey. If we get to next summer, the summer of 2019, it's still not out, I may pull the trigger and buy it for my PlayStation 4 and play it there, and we can report back then. But from everything I've seen, everything I've read, and all these streams I've watched, this game deserves the hype that it's getting. And a lot of the fans that are being brought to this gaming title, whether they played Red Dead Redemption originally or not, absolutely great title. They did a fantastic job with this game, and the hype is real for it.
And it's even more impressive thinking the fact that God of War was PlayStation exclusive, and this title being PlayStation and Xbox still ended in second on a lot of different voting polls. That just shows how good God of War was. This Red Dead Redemption 2 game seems incredible from everything we've seen, from every stream we've watched. There are so many fun aspects to it and so many unique animals and sights to see, and the graphics are just insane. The fact that it still plays second on many polls is huge for God of War. And I think that'll do it for 2018, John. There's one other game that I'm looking at. I just got it free with Xbox Gold. It's Celeste. It's arguably the number one game on a lot of other scoreboards as well, or at least top three. I just got this on Xbox Games with Gold for free, so I'm looking forward to playing that in 2019. It's pretty much a endless string of death serves as a tie-in. This is coming from the Thrillist article. A larger metaphor about overcoming depression and anxiety, but Celeste manages to do it artfully. Playing as Madeline, determined to summit the mountain Celeste, your pixelated character dashes, wall jumps, and climbs through the levels of the pseudo-haunted past Dell 2D world, fighting the physical embodiment, very good. It just sounds interesting to me. Like, I like things that have deeper themes to them. I personally don't suffer with anxiety and depression, but I do know a lot of people who do. And I like the idea of changing that into a game aspect, allowing people to overcome it in a new environment. So even if they're struggling in real life, this allows them to almost take on a new character who's also going through something similar and trying to overcome it in a different aspect to give that new hope, that new invigorated life to it. So I love when games hit that emotional string to them, and it seems like Celeste does it, and a lot of people are calling it their game of the year.
Yeah, and the hype around Celeste is fully deserved. A game, like Joey said, with that deeper meaning, that deeper theme involved in it, is always great. When you're a lore junkie, when you like games that have themes, that have a reason for why they were created, that's always going to draw people to it. The game definitely has an old school feel to it with its pixelated graphics and everything, and it does move from left to right like old school games used to. But this is great, and I had the opportunity to watch quite a bit of Celeste. We have a member of our OTN Discord who loves this game, plays it quite a bit, streams quite a bit. I've watched probably 3 days worth in time of him streaming this game, and it really is something unique, something different. And the hype around Celeste, personally for me, it's in my top five of 2018 for sure. This game, the story, the theme it portrays and the way it does it, and the gameplay is great. And once you beat the game, it doesn't stop there. There's modifiers that make the game harder to achieve different things. To really beat the game, you have to go through all the levels. I think it's almost 5 times on different skill levels to really achieve 100% completeness in this game. So if you're one of those players that like to grind out games and 100% complete them, this game is going to take you forever, and it's going to challenge you. It's going to challenge you to think outside the box, to try new skills, to try different things, to overcome these obstacles in the game. And the story really helps back that up with the character and the way it ties the character and the character struggles into the game and overcoming those struggles. It's really great. It's really positive, and it's a really, really great game. I believe it got a 10 out of 10 rating on Steam, which, you know, Steam can be a very negative place when the game launches bad. But Celeste didn't launch bad. It's been great ever since. Huge support. And this game started, it came out, I believe, January of 2018. So it's had a full 12-month cycle almost, and people are still playing this game like crazy. It's absolutely fantastic. I cannot say enough about Celeste. So, Joey, I'm happy that you got it. You're really going to enjoy this game. I'm curious to see your impression of it once you start playing it. But for me, I absolutely love this game. And I've actually never played it. I've just watched it. And it is entertaining to watch. So if that's true, it has to be entertaining to play as well.
I am pretty excited on that one. With that, though, John, let's transition to esports in 2018. A couple weeks ago, we talked a lot about this when we talked about our Game Awards show, because they did cover esports. We talked a lot about our favorite organization. We'll recap a little bit of that here. But first, we're going to kick it off with the most popular esports tournaments of 2018 based on hours watched on Twitch and YouTube. Kicking off at number one, we have the League of Legends World Championship in 2018. 74.3 million viewers tuning in from Twitch and YouTube. I believe it hit like 300 million, maybe something like that, with everyone included worldwide. So tons and tons of viewers. Again, this poll is just sticking to Twitch and YouTube, but League of Legends World Championship once again on top. Are you surprised, John?
No. I mean, look, when it comes to major tournaments, League of Legends is the golden standard. There's something about their ability to constantly, year after year after year, pull the viewers back in, whether it's the use of CGI with a gigantic dragon flying around the stadium, whether it's a virtual K-pop group that for some reason people are head over heels for, and I'm just not buying it. You know, they find a way to really entice the gamers of League of Legends to come watch the esports side of it. And if you're an esports junkie, you know you're watching League of Legends. And it's not surprising. It doesn't have the biggest prize pool in the world, like when you compare it to Dota or some of the other things. It's not the biggest prize pool, but just the hype around it and the fact that it is still one of the most, if not the most, played video games still worldwide, that's always going to translate well to your esports scene. And time again, we're seeing League of Legends do that again and again and again. And it really doesn't surprise me. And now if you were to include those other stream sites that had League of Legends World, yeah, we're going to see this up around 300 million easily. That's how big this was. Yes, that will include all the viewers from China. That's going to include a lot of the Asian viewers as well outside of China that aren't represented in Twitch and YouTube. So we're only getting a sample size of it, but 74.3 million in 2018, that's a lot of people watching a video game. That is something that baby boomers are still trying to understand. How can 74.3 million people watch League of Legends? Joey, you and I were one of them. We even went to a watch party for League of Legends Worlds. That's how big this is getting, that we're starting to see watch parties thrown by these organizations in local cities. That's taking esports to a whole nother level.
It's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And John, with NA and EU now being franchised, on top of the fact that they started revenue sharing this past year for NA, this next year for EU, and we're also seeing different things like the prize pool and the crowdfunding being put into play in League of Legends, I expect this prize pool money to continue to go up and up. I hope we see more and more crowdfunding because people are willing to pay. We see League of Legends making over $1 billion each year in skins sold. You throw a little price tag on that, give a little bit back to the organizations and the players. I really think that prize pool could skyrocket. Speaking of the biggest prize pool, though, we have Dota's The International second in line. 52.8 million people viewing on that one. John, this was actually the first year I spent my most time watching The International as well. Just growing more and more into esports, I wanted to give more attention to Dota, knowing that huge prize pool that's there. So I actually watched a few more matches this year. Unfortunately, my team Fnatic got knocked out pretty early, as did some of the NA teams I follow. But overall, it was an exciting tournament. Dota does a good job with that. I do not think the production value is online with what we see with Riot Games and League of Legends, but the prize pool is definitely there, and the passion of the fans is definitely there as well.
Yeah, that's something that Dota 2 fans can really hang their hat on, is the fact that community is incredibly passionate when it comes to esports. They will support their esports scene with that crowdfunding to help increase that prize pool. And we track it every year right here on the Level Up Podcast, Joey. We talk about it week after week after week, seeing how freaking high this prize pool can go. It was over $25 million this year with all of the community supporting it, and buying those bundles, those skins, and everything else that you can buy in game, that a portion goes to that prize pool. Dota 2, while its numbers are not on par with League of Legends and Riot and their esports scene, that is still incredibly impressive for the second best esport and biggest tournament in the world, being Dota 2 the International. So that's really cool, and I would love to see that crowdsource funding come to League of Legends too. I think the players deserve it. I think Riot would embrace the community better if they did that, but that would mean that they would have to be willing to give up some of their profits, which I think would be best in their interest if they did, to help grow the community even more.
Yeah, and I think Riot has enough money that they should be willing to give some back.
You never have enough money.
When we look at esports, though, Riot Games is doing it very well, and I think increasing these player salaries, increasing the prize pools at the events, is just the order of events that should come next. We're seeing it with the franchising that's allowing organizations to feel more stability and to put more money into their players and organizations, and we're going to see more and more people crowdfund if Riot Games gives us the option to do that, because I think we can get this prize pool. Honestly, I think it can overpass Dota, but Dota does hold strong onto it, as it is their big claim to fame as of now. Number three, we have the E-League Major. That's the Boston Major that Cloud9 won in North America. 49.5 million viewers on that one. And arguably the match of the tournament was Cloud9 versus FaZe Clan.
Yeah, and I feel like all 49.5 million people tuned in for that finals match once they realized, oh my God, Cloud9 made it to a finals and they're actually taking on FaZe Clan. And they're doing it. They're not only are they doing it, they did it. It's just one of those things where it's like, Joey, I believe we were on Discord. We were doing something, and we were just monitoring. We weren't like watching it, but all of a sudden we were just like, "Holy crap! Cloud9 made it to the finals. They're going up against FaZe Clan." Yeah, there's some controversy around the scheduling and everything else involved there, but at the end of the day, Cloud9 still made their way to the finals, going up against FaZe Clan, and they won. And I don't know. Like, I'm a huge Cloud9 fan, and like, I didn't know what to do. Cloud9's never been in that position before, and it was like, you've seen Cloud9. If you're a Cloud9 fan, you've seen reverse sweeps for their League of Legends team when it comes to the Gauntlet. You've seen them make their runs in Worlds. You know, this year alone, making it all the way to the semifinals, the Final Four of Worlds, you know, after they were the 10th place team in the NALCS. Cloud9 has done a lot this year, including winning the Rocket League championship series. You know, they've done a ton. The Boston Major, though, really, really shook up the CSGO scene. Like, people were tuning in. Didn't matter what organization you were from, we were all NA for that moment in time. NA came together and said, oh, Cloud9 has a chance to win the first major in CSGO for any NA team. It was phenomenal. It was amazing. I was on the edge of my seat. I was screaming at my computer. I'm sorry, computer, but yes, I was screaming at it. And it was so weird. And to go up against a team like a legendary team like FaZe, like, you've got to be kidding me. And Cloud9 did it. The hype around the Boston Major was completely legit. 52 million people. That's the reason why you see such a big jump there between 43.8 and 52.8 is because of the fact Cloud9 did as well as they did. Personally, in my opinion, that's why I'm going to hang my hat on there. A lot of people tuned in for that final match, and I'm talking millions of people around the world tuned in for that match, and it did not disappoint.
Yeah, so 49.5 million there in the E-League Boston Major, and it was followed by another CSGO event, John, the Face It Major London with 47.2. So just about 2 million shy there for the next big CSGO tournament. CSGO absolutely killed it in 2018. They also went free-to-play in December, added a Battle Royale mode, and on top of that, their numbers continue to grow. This is a game that feels like it's been around for, 10, 15 years now, and it's still going up. The player base is still growing. It's absolutely incredible. Then from there, we have the League of Legends Mid-Season Invitational coming in fifth at 27.3 million. This is actually a decrease from last year's 34.8 million. I think a lot of that has to do with the teams we saw at the event as well. And I don't want to say the timing of the event, but the timing of the event felt a bit off this year. Spring Split felt a little slower for this past season, and I think that led into why we didn't see as much excitement at the Mid-Season Invitational. I expect those numbers to jump back up, and I think we'll be north of 35 million this next year. Wrapping out the final 10, we have four more Dota tournaments. The Kuala Lumpur Epicenter, what is that? The China Dota 2 Super Major, the Dota 2 Asian Championships. And in that ninth spot, it is held by a Counter-Strike tournament, the Star Series Season 4. So a lot of exciting stuff, a lot of CSGO and Dota all over the board, with League of Legends and CSGO and Dota holding major spots as well. Again, your top five, League of Legends World Championship, Dota 2 the International, followed by two CSGO events, the E-League Major and FACEIT Major London, wrapping it up with a mid-season invitational for League of Legends.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Where's Fortnite?
They don't do esports very well, John.
I would argue they don't do esports in general. you know, I love watching that debate on Twitter and on Reddit and everything when it comes to Fortnite and its competitive scene. But yeah, Fortnite is still struggling. While it's a massively popular game, when it comes to their esports scene, it's completely mismanaged. It's completely mishandled. It's a nightmare when you watch it. Yeah, I would love to watch pro players turtle for 3 hours on Twitch, said no one ever. So, yeah, it just Fortnite has the potential. We've talked about it before. It's not surprising to see them nowhere close to 10th place. I would argue they're not even in the top 50 when it comes to esport tournaments. It's just it's so, so bad how Fortnite is doing when it comes to esports. Yes, it technically is an esport. It has a competitive scene, but it's not a very good one. And that's the issue. So in 2019, who knows? Maybe they'll try to figure it out. PUBG is starting to do it. They've put down a league. They put down rules. They put down what seems to be a winning formula for a Battle Royale esport mode. But Fortnite's still struggling. And because of that, again, nowhere close to the top 10 when it comes to esport tournaments of 2018.
Yeah, there's a few exciting things to look at. Well, exciting, but also disappointing and interesting things to look at here. Fortnite in general, I don't feel like has captured the Asian audience, and I think that's hurting them a lot. Not only is Epic a little bit unorganized, well, really unorganized when it comes to the competitive scene, they're throwing money at it, but it's not quite coming together the way they want it to. But you also look at Overwatch League. This is a hugely popular league in the NA. It's extremely well throughout the regular season, but it's not capturing that Asian audience, and that's why we don't see it in the top 10 here. So if I'm Overwatch, if I'm Blizzard, if I'm Epic Games as well, I think you have to look to Korea, you have to look to Asia, you have to look at Taiwan, and you have to try to bring in those audiences. Overwatch eclipsed League of Legends for a while there, but it really died down this year in terms of playing in Korean cafes. They need to find a way to bring people back to Overwatch. Hopefully these new teams in China, Seoul continues to build itself up in Korea. If we can see a lot of these teams continue to build fan bases and bring themselves more viewers, then I think we could see Overwatch League up here next year and potentially Fortnite as well if they get their stuff together. But they did it once again, John. They released a huge update right before a major esport tournament. And once again, the players are pissed. Management's pissed. Orgs are pissed. It just feels like Fortnite is a game that has a side component, almost like a side quest at this point, of esports. It doesn't even feel like it wants to be its own entity.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is when Epic was called out for that major change before that one of their major tournaments, they literally shrugged and said, oh, well. They literally said, hey, look, this isn't a change because of the pro scene. This is a change because a majority of our players are casual gamers. So that's why we're going to make the change. Really? Like, do you remember the outrage that we saw in 2018 around the NBA 2K League when they made the stiff arm motion that was already pre-built into the game illegal? Like, it was already in the game, but if you used it, like, that was going to cost you the game. They didn't go in and hot fix it because you really can't. They didn't go in and hot fix it. They didn't say, hey, wait, let's make this change for 2019 when NBA 2K19 comes out. They did it, like, on a Tuesday, days prior to the start of their next week in their league. And there's a lot of outreach from all the organizations.
I think it was before their midseason tournament even.
Yeah.
And like, I think it was before cash was on the line.
Exactly. So it's like, you can't make a major change like that in a structured league. What gives Epic the right to do that to Fortnite before a multi-million dollar tournament that they're trying to put on, that they're trying to promote as a legitimate esport, as an esport that is going to try to stand the test of time, that is going to try to get viewers and become this behemoth game, kind of like what League of Legends is and what Overwatch is trying to do, what NBA 2K League, and everyone else is trying to do. And they're just shooting themselves in their foot, and it makes absolutely no sense. If other leagues get smashed doing it, then why don't you get smashed for doing it? And they are, and they deserve to get that hate for that change prior to a major tournament. You just can't do that.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing a lot of developers need to look at. League of Legends has been better about it over the years. They've kind of grown to encourage their players and to understand their players a bit more and not make these major changes before tournaments. We still see it a bit. We still see it a bit in Dota. We still see it a bit in League. But overall, the sports games in general have really made a lot of these changes, as well as Epic with Fortnite. So hopefully we see less and less of this, where EA or 2K or any of these particular sport game makers don't make these major changes before tournaments, because it really does mess with players. And trying to relearn something that quickly before a tournament is not only stressful on the mind, but on the body as well. And it also just shakes up a player, and it's not going to give the viewers the best competition either. If the players have practiced on one thing, they're going to know that style. You can't change it right beforehand, because then it's going to look like sloppy play. Viewers are going to question, are these really the best players in the world? You're going to lose viewership. You're going to lose numbers. And it's just, it doesn't help anyone in that sense. So if you're going to make these major updates, do it at a time where it's not going to completely interrupt your competitive scene, where there's tons and tons of money on the line. So I think Epic is going to learn from this. I really hope they... You would think like the fourth or fifth time's a charm now, but we see it once again with the boombox change here just recently. So hopefully in 2019, they come together and get that together. Maybe Ninja can be the representative there and speak to them about it.
God, you know, Ninja's doing so much for that game, and they're not even really capitalizing on that either. By the way, speaking of Ninja, did you by chance watch his stream last night for New Year's?
I did, and I liked it, but I was also disappointed at the same point. I wish we could have saw him up on stage more. I wanted more Ninja on stage. So I get the whole streaming thing. That's what he's known for. But I would have liked a little bit more of a mix. Like Ninja with Steve Harvey would have been very funny on Fox.
Oh,
or Ninja in there with some of these other hosts.
Steve Harvey was so bad.
It was a little cringeworthy, but he is hilarious at times.
A little. I literally threw the remote at the television last night for like the 10 minutes I was watching the countdown on Fox. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I was so waiting for the ball to drop on him and Steve Harvey like, welcome to 2008. And it's like, no, Steve, you screwed it up again. Like, come on. It's 2019, not 2008. Like, I was just completely. And yes, chat is right on it again. You could have watched CNN, Joey, and watched Anderson Cooper take shots live on television.
Oh, I don't think I tuned into CNN. I looked at ABC, NBC, and Fox.
Twitch. They are trying so hard to make these New Year's Eve shows entertaining to the millennial generation and to Gen Z. They're really giving up on Gen X and baby boomers. They don't care about them anymore. They're really, really trying hard to get the younger viewers to watch. And it is so cringy now. And like to turn back to Ninja real quick, I'm gonna give him the cringe award. And for one reason only. He tried to get a million people in Times Square to floss and failed miserably. And
it was like five.
It looked so bad. Ninja played it off quite well. But I'm watching. I was just like, oh, my God, this is so bad. This looks terrible. I feel uncomfortable. I'm not even there. It was just, oh, I feel so bad for Ninja. I felt like I needed to take a shower after seeing how bad that failed.
It was at the end of the night, though, right?
It was, but still.
So,
it just.
I think if you did it earlier in the night after these people had not been standing out in the rain for like 7-8 hours and completely soaking wet, I think more people would have joined in. I don't think it was a completely, hey, let's not do this dance. I think it's we're feeling completely miserable at this point. We just want to be in our beds. So I don't
That's
know.
Fair.
I think if you do it earlier, I think you get more people at the same point. Yeah, it was cringeworthy.
Yeah, I mean, especially watching some of the older people trying to floss while they were doing that. Oh, it was bad. It was like one lady was just kind of like throwing her arms back and forth in front of her. I'm just like, oh, that's close. You gotta add those hips. You gotta get between the body there a little. Oh my gosh. Oh.
You need to do a demonstration for us, John?
No, I'm not. I'm sitting down. You can't floss while you're sitting down. Sorry.
Oh my gosh. Okay, that wraps up for 2018. Let's talk a little bit about the games we're looking forward to in 2019, and then we will wrap this episode up. John, I am going to kick it off. There's a few. The one that comes out in January that's on my mind is Kingdom Hearts. Kingdom Hearts 3. It feels like it's been delayed for, I don't even know, 5 years, 4 years, 3 years. It's been quite a while at least. It is finally coming out January 29, and it is going to be on PlayStation and Xbox One. This is a huge title. So many people buy into Kingdom Hearts. No matter what genre of games you like, I feel like everyone finds a way to like Kingdom Hearts. It's finally coming, John. I believe it's going to be released this time. I don't think they're going to cancel again. January 29th is the date.
Yeah, and there's a ton of hype around Kingdom Hearts, and rightfully so. It's a Disney Universe video game, and look, it's great. I've played the old Kingdom Hearts games. It's fine. I'm excited for it as well. You just have to hope it doesn't get delayed again. That's really what you have to do right now, is sit on your hands and wait to see if it actually gets released.
Anthem, February 22nd, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. I am so wanting Anthem to be amazing. I think Anthem has the potential to be that Mass Effect meshes into Destiny 1, let's say Destiny 1, type of title. I think it has a ton of potential if they build upon it. You have BioWare with their excellent storytelling. We've seen it over and over again. Mass Effect, that trilogy was excellent. And then you bring in all these Destiny elements with the open world aspect to it. Can Anthem deliver, John? Will this be the game we want it to be, or will it flop like Destiny 2 did at its launch?
Look, I'm right there with you. I have a lot of hope for Anthem. I'm really hyped about it. I can't wait to play it. But the problem is, in the back of my mind, is that tumor called Destiny. And it's just festering on everything that is like Destiny and or gives me that Destiny vibe. And I'm terrified. I am terrified that it's going to be a flop. It's going to be an absolute joke. It's going to be like another No Man's Sky. It's going to be an absolute disaster. That's my fear. I'm positive that it won't be. I'm positive that the hype is real for this game. The graphics look amazing. The previews have been fantastic. I need this game to restore my faith in some of these developers is what it's really coming down to. And I'm going to be buying this game as soon as it comes out. They've convinced me to do it. I just really hope it's a complete game. It needs to be a complete game. Don't ship me a 50% complete game and release the other 50% as DLCs down the road and thanking me for buying an edition. No, if you're going to be charging me the full $60, I want a full complete game. I want more than 2 hours of storyline. I want more than 2 hours of content. Destiny. I want more for the money I'm giving out there. So I am hyped, and I really, really think Anthem is going to deliver.
Not only that, but I think the biggest thing for me with this game is I want it to be a continuation. I don't want to see an Anthem 2 3 years down the road. I want it just to be Anthem. I want to see this game continue to be built upon, like we see with like a League of Legends, like a Dota 2. Obviously, very, very different games, but how they continue to build upon one base game. Destiny, I think, should have done the same thing with Destiny. I thought that was going to be a game that was forever Destiny. Maybe 10 years down the road, you release something new for new graphic updates, but I feel like what we're seeing now, we want people to buy into games that last. If Anthem is going to do this right, I think they need to build it to last and have a very good end game to it. If they have a bad end game like Destiny 2, I think people are going to die off very quickly, and we will see the audience almost halved by May.
And if I may jump in with one of the games I'm psyched for 2019. Please. Coming out on January 18th, I teased it a little bit before we started the show here, Joey. Ace Combat. As someone who's a big aviation nerd also, I love the Ace Combat series. Ace Combat 7 Skies Unknown is coming out January 18th for the PS4 and Xbox One. PC players, we have to wait till February 1st. I will be buying this game. I love aerial combat. I love aerial dogfights. I love the fact that I can fly some of these fighter jets from around the world, from different countries, from different militaries. And just the storyline that they've developed in a lot of the other Ace Combats. Personally, to me, as someone who likes flying, who likes aviation, this game I've been hyped for and really has been one of the most successful aviation fighter games anywhere. We've seen other developers attempt to make an aerial fighting, dogfighting style kind of game and failed miserably. Ace Combat has been a title that has, from time and time again, proven it can jump from console to console, from generation to generation, and still deliver and still provide amazing content, amazing graphics, amazing gameplay. I'm pumped for Ace Combat 7. Joey, I know you love dogfights also. Do you have an opinion on Ace Combat 7 by chance?
That sounds so bad out of context. No, I think Ace is great. One of the things that always got me in playing games, and it might just be me, is the whole inverted control thing. That takes me forever to get used to on any flying game. I don't know why, but like changing the whole aligning of the analog stick to go up and down instead of down and up and all that different thing, it always throws me off. I love the idea of the game. I don't know if this is one I will be getting though, John. Unless you tempt me, then it's possible.
Look, the reason it's inverted is because in real life, if you push up on the joystick, your nose of the plane goes down. If you pull back, the nose of the plane goes up. That's real life, Joey. That's not just a video game thing. That's how planes fly. And I'm going to need you to accept that.
If I ever hop in a plane, we can talk about that. Let's talk Xbox. Crackdown 3. I am not this hyped for Crackdown 3. I think it's awesome that Terry Crews is going to be the main actor of the game. The thing that excites me most about this game is the cloud-based environmental stuff they're doing. So everything in the environment is going to be breakable. It's all cloud-based and it's all real-time. So the ability to take things down the way they did in some of the demos that I've seen, it's instantaneous and it is so quick and so clean. So the thing that sticks out to me for Crackdown 3 is not the game itself, but the engine it's built upon. I think it's really unique, and we're going to see more and more of Microsoft developing upon this with the new game studios they acquired. Sticking with Xbox, we have Gears of War 5. This is Xbox and PlayStation, or not PlayStation, excuse me, PC. Xbox One and PC, Gears 5, the next big installment in the Gears of War series. A huge IP for Xbox has always done well. Gears of War and Halo are two of your big staple ones over there. I am stoked for Gears 5. Gears 4 was great. They redid the trilogy. This is the new trilogy in a sense. They brought the old characters in as older figures, and now we have these new characters arising, new storylines, new enemies. I really liked it. I love the Horde mode aspect in Gears games as well. And this will probably be my first Gears game that I get on PC as opposed to Xbox.
All right. I'm going to be that guy. I've never been a big Gears fan. I can't really tell you why. It has everything in a game that I would want. It has a storyline. It has lore. It has great graphics. It never did it for me. During the PlayStation Network outage, when I had an Xbox for a period of time, I bought Gears of War for it. I played Gears of War. Was not a fan. I can see why a lot of people are. Just for me, it never really did it for me. So I can't say I'm excited for this. I'm gonna sit back, Joey. I'm going to let you buy it. I'm going to watch you play it, and I will form an opinion from that. But no, I'm not wasting my time or money on it.
See, if anything buys you into it, I don't think it'll be the story as much as Horde mode. If they do Horde mode right in Gears 5, I think that's going to be what brings more casual players in. People who haven't invested their time into the previous four games of Gears story, but people who want that fun aspect. It's almost like Battle Royale, for example.
Oh, no.
No one gets Fortnite for Save the World. Did anyone buy Fortnite for Save the World? I'm sure there's people out there, but no one plays it anymore. They all go for the Battle Royale aspect. Same with a lot of these other games. You have Call of Duty. Some people bought it for the multiplayer. A lot of people are buying it for Battle Royale now. I think Gears of War 5 has the potential to do the same thing with Horde mode. It's new, it's fresh, it's not a Battle Royale mode. It's something different, but it's a good supplement that a lot of people could buy into. Again, the big thing here is that you're hit with a $60 price tag for it, unless they do something fancy where they release it for free or they release a discounted mode for Horde mode. But I think if you see casual players buy into the Gears of War franchise, it's going to be the Horde mode more than the story. With that being said, I love the story, but I am probably in the minority of people who do not play Xbox in that sense. What else we got, John? We're coming to the end of the show here. Is there anything else jumping out to you? Code Vein is one that interests me. It's kind of like a JRPG version of Dark Souls is what it's being marketed as. It has some cool co-op elements. Hey, John. So it could be interesting. It's almost like anime meets Dark Souls, so it's going to be very complex, a lot of systems to jump into, a lot of hard boss fights, but it brings that JRPG, which is a bit lighter aspect in the sense that it's got a almost cartoonier aspect to it. It's not all that complete gore and blood and real life looking aspect that we saw in Dark Souls. It's going to have more of a toonish look to it. So I'm excited for Code Vein. I don't know if I'll get this one straight up. It doesn't have a release date yet, but I am intrigued by the co-op aspects of it and the difficulty of the game as well.
Okay, just to rattle a couple off real quick, I believe there is a new Wolfenstein coming out in 2019. Wolfenstein was one of the games that really jump-started me and my passion for gaming. It was a game that my dad introduced to me back in the 90s when I was a kid, and it was great. It was fantastic. And while the series has taken more of a sci-fi futuristic twist on it, who doesn't like killing zombie Nazis, really, is what it comes down to. So that's a title I'm looking forward to as well. Another one that I'm looking forward to, The Division 2, Tom Clancy. March 15th, coming out on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. That had huge reviews from their E3 2018 trailer that they put out there. That's one that takes place right here in Washington, D.C. Joey, I remember we were watching the trailer together, and we're like, oh, we know exactly where they're at. I know where that plane crashed. I know where they're shooting. That's the National Botanical Garden. That's over by Nats Park. That's by the White House. We're sitting here going like, oh, this is kind of cool. So that's a game that I'm probably going to be buying on March 15th when it comes out. Again, PS4, Xbox, and PlayStation 4. Joey, I'm curious on your...
Now, wait, I got to hop in on the Division. Yeah, exactly. So the Division 2, Division 1 had huge acclaim. Mm-hmm. In fact, if I had a new gen console, I would have got it. Mm. Division 2 is getting less acclaim than the Division 1 did, and Division 1 fell flat.
Yeah.
So I am really worried for this series. I think this could be Destiny 2 all over again. Mm. I'm hoping they've learned from their mistakes in Division 1 and from Destiny 2's terrible launch. At the same point, John, the fact that it's in DC, I think, is one reason you and I are a little bit more turned on to the game in general. Yeah. So I want it to be good. I really do. But this is one that I'm probably going to watch or try before I buy.
Let's see. Another one that's coming up that hit my radar, Resident Evil 2, coming out later this month in January. Again, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Resident Evil, a horror game that has really also stood the test of time. I'm pretty pumped about it. Everything looks great. A lot of people thought it was going to be a remake, but really it's starting to sound like it's a completely different game with a whole new story and everything else out to add more content into it. Joey, I remember playing Resident Evil as a kid. That thing terrified me, and I cannot wait to be spooked again by Resident Evil 2 when it comes out later in January.
Resident Evil is a great one. John, another one, Skull and Bones. It seems like Sea Games are the next Battle Royale of 2019 almost. We had Sea of Thieves in 2018. They're continuing to add more content. We just had Atlas come out as well. The Ark secondary, or the, I guess, the I don't know what I'm looking for. The sequel to Ark, I guess, kind of. It's almost like an Ark reskin that's been completely changed over and added more ocean elements to it. Now we have Skull and Bones, which is going to be Ubisoft's answer to that. They're coming out adapting what we saw in Assassin's Creed, particularly Black Flag, as well as a bit of Odyssey. They're going to change that whole naval aspect and turn it into a completely whole new game with Skull and Bones. So another pirate game. I don't know if I'm super hyped for it, but it is getting a lot of hype overall. I just feel like it's starting to get a little too saturated in this category.
Absolutely. And then the last two I'm going to touch on real quick. I won't go too far because there's not a lot of information out there just yet. There is going to be a new Pokemon title coming out in 2019, late in 2019. It's going to go right along the tradition of like Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, Sun and Moon, dating all the way back to the OG Pokemon, Red, Blue, Yellow, Silver, Jade, I think was one.
Gold,
all the other fun stuff. So I'm pumped for that. That's going to be Nintendo Switch. And the last one, the fighter game I personally love the most, Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat 11 coming out in April of 2019. Again, that is PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and the Switch. Love, love, love Mortal Kombat, and can't wait for 11 to come out as well.
Yeah, so alongside that Pokemon title, you're also getting a new Yoshi title for Nintendo Switch. You're getting Mario and Luigi. You're getting another new Mario title. You're getting Luigi's Mansion 3. So Nintendo Switch having a really good year last year. They're continuing to come out with another big year this year. We saw Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. Was that last year or the year before, John? I think it was the year before, actually, 2017. Yeah, so big title there. Mario Galaxy was that same year as well. So Nintendo, this is their next phase. We're going to see a lot of big titles coming out for them. Obviously, they're going to continue to feed the Smash Bros. Scene as well, as we see Ultimate continue to make its way into esports, and Splatoon trying to make its way in as well.
Now, just one
question. So a lot of exciting stuff. Yes, sir.
One question. Are we going to classify Atlas a 2019 game as well, since it's an early release currently right now, and it did early release in 2018 after that disaster that was early game access? Or are we just going to say it's a 2019 game and hopefully they'll have all the bugs fixed by then?
We'll say 2018 for Atlas because it was released in 2018 and it feels a lot like Ark. And in a sense, I feel like it took Ark like 2 years to fully release.
True.
They did like the whole PUBG treatment. So it could be a 2020 game if we wait on that one.
Fair enough.
What are your thoughts on Ark so far, though, John?
On Ark or Atlas?
Oh, I'm sorry, Atlas.
So far, after the bugs, like we're playing on an unofficial server. I feel like the biggest issue people are complaining about is the lag that you're experiencing from joining these massive servers that have like 40,000 people on it. And that's going to happen. World of Warcraft experienced the same issue back in vanilla when, you know, millions and millions of people came on the servers. I think they have like over 50 servers now. And when you're in populated areas, you experience lag. It happens. I feel like Atlas and their crew could have handled it a little bit better, but they're dedicated to doing daily patches. I remember I was playing the other day, had three patches in one day. So kudos to them for being aggressive in fixing their game. It is playable. The graphics are amazing. The jump animation is very cringy. That's where I'm still bothered by is jump animation. The building, the ship building is amazing. We were sailing yesterday before my New Year's Eve party I went to. It was really cool. And yeah, I understand Alice is getting a lot of flack because it's essentially just Ark reskinned. Yes, I understand if you're playing with a controller, there's a secret hidden menu that when you pop it up, it's literally an Ark menu that has the region that you're loading into called Ocean. Yes, a lot of people think it's a DLC. But guys, look, it's priced at $25 to $29. That is a DLC price, so they're not asking you for $60. I think that is a fair price point for a game that is an early release. It's fine. I get it. As someone who never played Ark, because I don't think it's worth that $60 price point, I think Atlas is a great option at that $25 to $30 price point. If you are willing to play Ark with all of its bugs, you're willing to play Atlas. It's fine. They're going to keep continuing to fix the game as it goes along, as it is still an early release. People need to understand that. I feel like that's one thing that gets overlooked. It is an early release. Yes, it's incredibly negative on the reviews on Steam. I was debating on buying it. I did it. I played it. So far, I'm enjoying it. It's right up there with Sea of Thieves when it comes to nautical games. So I feel like there's a lot of potential here, and I feel like that price point is spot on to get gamers to pull that trigger.
And very different than Sea of Thieves too, John, I would also say. Mm. I feel like the ocean aspect in Sea of Thieves is much, much better than Atlas, in my opinion. Mm. I feel like it's much more hands-on. You're actually turning sails. You're actually steering the steering wheel, as opposed to setting in different commands like angles and things like that, and then the boat does itself. I think the thing that Atlas brings into it that Sea of Thieves doesn't have is the gathering and survival aspects. Mm-hmm. Really, Sea of Thieves, the only thing you're surviving from is other pirates and maybe sharks in the ocean, or krakens or megalodons and stuff like that. But you really don't die because of vitamins or for not eating or different things like that. Atlas does have that, though. You can die from not getting those vitamins, from not having enough nutrients, from getting too hot or getting too cold. So I think the survival aspects that it brings from Ark are what really sets it apart in that sense from other titles like Sea of Thieves. With that being said, I think my biggest complaint is the lighting. The lighting changes very awkwardly at times, and you almost have to overcoat it with some gamma coating. The other thing that drives me crazy is the graphics. I don't know for you, but at least for me, they don't always load in properly. Like, they'll almost continue to be loading in as you go into new zones. Like, it takes a while. It's not like a, let's just load this in. It's kind of like a slow load in at times. And it's there. It's like the figures are there, but they get crisper and crisper as the game loads in, it feels like. So that's just something, again, it's an early release. I think that could be figured up over time. But overall, I've had fun with it. And I think the group that you're playing with is what makes the game in and of itself. The game itself, I would probably get bored playing by myself, gathering hundreds and hundreds of materials and building a fort. I would probably not last long at all. But the fact that I'm playing with other people, I'm having fun getting chased down by alpha giraffes and these crazy high-powered things, or fighting skeleton armies, different things like that with the group I play with, is why I keep going back to the game, and why I'm investing into it, because I definitely don't have the time to put on it all by myself. But having a company, having a crew that's very solid is the reason I'm going to go back to the game. And I think it's going to be the same for you, John.
No, you're absolutely right. The game is definitely grindy. It has that vanilla WoW feel. If you played the original vanilla WoW, you can remember how grindy that was. Definitely has the same feel. The survival aspect is really cool. Building your ship, I think, is really cool. That is something different from Sea of Thieves also, where you're just pretty much given the ship. Yeah, you can customize it with colored sails and everything. In Atlas, you literally have to build the ship yourself, and it takes days, which is really cool. I do like that. I have experienced some of those graphic delays here and there. It hasn't been really too noticeable for me. But other than that, I think the game is playable. I think, again, it is who you play it with. I would not play it by myself. I would be incredibly bored by it. Survival games are meant to be played in communities, because you don't survive as an individual. You survive as a community. So that's the really cool aspect there. You have to have people to play it with. I think that's the same argument you have in Ark. I think a lot of people play it with friends. They have a group of people they play with versus trying to do it by themselves, because you're just not going to survive. And Joey, I'm waiting for Nintendo to buy Atlas so you can be attacked by an alpha Jigglypuff. That's what I want to see in the future.
if only. But for now, guys, this has been a little bit longer episode than we usually do. But hey, it's New Year's, so you guys got some extra content here. These are some of the games John and I are looking forward to for 2019, though. We're excited to play stuff like Anthem or The Division or Atlas or these other exciting games with you guys in the community. You can check out our Discord. We'll give you that link soon. John, we're also excited for a ton of esports events in 2019. And we're just going to have to wait for them to come because there is a lot of excitement down the road for us.
Washington Justice and Overwatch League. Let's go. We have a hometown team, Joey.
Woohoo!
Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get exclusive access to content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, Twitch listeners, go ahead and head on over to the Level Up Podcast. That is at the LVLUP Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can also find us streaming on the regular at twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will be back. It's going to be a short break. We're going to be back next week, Monday. So remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.